And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This episode of Bush's Break is brought to you by you, the listener. As you knew that already. Come on. You can go to patreon.com/Bush's Breakaway where we do our BSBOTs. We do a bunch of other stuff. I did a breakdown of Gallant's introductory press conference. I think I'm doing a Taco Bell episode this or next week. A lot of fun stuff. Thanks for joining us there. Greg and I talk about, you're never going to believe it, Jack Eichel, probably the Mets at some point. We have Jesse Granger of The Athletic who comes on to talk about Gallant. We can't find a guy to say a bad thing about him. By the way, Jesse comes on a little bit early, so we end the first segment kind of like very quickly with haste, as I would say. So if that's annoying to you, I am sorry. My apologies, but it is a great interview. We learn a lot about Gallant and what you have to look forward to in the future as a Ranger fan. Very insightful interview. Then we come back and answer some five-star questions. If you want to leave a five-star review, ask a question, you can do that on iTunes. Or you can go to our Patreon Discord, where you can leave a question there. That's enough blabbering. Let's get to ESPN commentator Mark Messier.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Hey, Blue Shirt Breakaway. Welcome to the new Blue Shirt Breakaway. I am your host, Ryan Mead. Patreon of patreon.com/Blue Shirt Breakaway. You can support a good cause like me and Greg. Gregory is my co-host. Gregory is here. Greg, say hello.
Went to six Met games last week, Ryan. Six.
Yeah, this was my open. So you saw history. I was at dinner, and I was like, I got to bring up Greg, and they were like, why? I was like, great question. In 51 years, there has not been a record broke of 10 consecutive strikeouts, and it was tied. And of course, you were there. Your reaction, Gregory?
When he struck out the side the second time, I turned to our mutual friend, Jeff Belitsky and John York, and I told them both. I was like, you guys know the record is 10, right? And they're like, what are you talking about? I was like, he struck out the last six batters. I'm reminding you right now that the record is 10 because I just had a feeling.
Yeah.
At least it didn't get broken.
And they won. The Mets won.
They did win. But I'm just going to, again, I'm going to go back to the point here, Ryan. I went to six Met games last week.
Yes.
Game one, in which Jacob deGrom is pitching, so you know I've bet the under
in the
first
five
innings. Yep. The Mets score five runs.
Okay. Fine. Whatever. Elation. Fun.
Yeah. Fine. No big deal. Greg loses his bet. He sees the Mets score five runs. This is the start of his week with the Mets. No big deal. The next five games I go to, Ryan, the Mets combined to score five runs.
Yes.
They got shut out twice. Second game of the doubleheader Monday and the game on Tuesday in which I brought friend of the show Will Spector.
Yep.
They on Friday, the doubleheader I went to, they scored two runs in game one and they won. They scored one run in game two and they lost. And then on Sunday, another game in which they lost, they scored two runs. So I went to five games after that first game, and they scored just as many runs in those five games as it did in game one.
It couldn't be more of a Greg Kaplan week. And you know it's all your fault, right?
Well, that's the thing. Like the weirdest part about this is they started the week with a four-game lead in the division. They end the week with a four-game lead in the division.
It's like a question mark?
The NL East is just bad.
A disaster.
Straight up.
A disaster. A lot has happened in the last, like, I don't know, hour before we recorded. Sometimes
Has it, though?
Yeah.
Unless we're talking about France, Switzerland, then yes, a lot has happened.
Well, explain to people who don't know about France, Switzerland exactly what happened, like me, because I have no idea.
Oh, my God. The football games today were fucking incredible.
No, I've been so busy. I know that sounds crazy. I probably should have had them on, but I did know it was like free kicks or whatever it is at the end, right?
Yeah, penalty kicks.
Right, got it.
First of all, in game one, Spain was up by two goals in the 85th minute, and they gave up those two goals.
Perfect.
And it went to extra time, and then they won by two. But in France, my God, they were up by two goals in the 81st minute. They give up the two goals to send it to extra time. Nobody scores in the extra time. It comes down to penalty kicks. Both teams make their first four, And then Switzerland makes their fifth, which means France has to make its fifth to continue the game. Mm-hmm. They saved their best player for the fifth spot, Kylian Mbappe, and he was stonewalled. It wasn't even a bad penalty. It was just a fucking hell of a save. And Switzerland advances. France, the world champions, the 2018 World Cup champions, are done. They're out.
That's the best. Good for them. Hey, he's got a World Cup, right? It's okay. I'm sure nobody's going to yell about it at all or burn anything.
Mbappe also makes like $500,000 a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's doing fine.
All right. So anyway, let's go to some NHL news, and we'll talk about some of that with our friend Jesse Granger today from The Athletic. Well, he's going to come on and talk about the Vegas Golden Knights and some other topics around there, including Gerard Gallant. Who knew that way, right? Surprise, surprise. Mm-hmm. The 2022 draft is in Montreal, Gregory.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're going. We got to be there.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see who the Sabres take with the Rangers pick. Should be good.
All right, let's talk about it. The Rangers are in, but they're out. But they're just asking. They're just curious. They're doing due diligence, but they're not interested because the price is too high. But if it came down, they might be in, but I'm pretty sure they're out. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're saying they're in. Nobody has ever done due diligence on a guy they don't want to acquire, right? That's called a waste of time.
Yeah, why the hell, if you're not in, like, you're doing due diligence. Listen, it's still negotiating through the media, especially with the Brooks article. It pretty much says, like, well, first of all, Buffalo hasn't released the medicals to any teams, and they won't release the medicals to any teams unless they get too deep into trade talks. What is too deep into trade talks? Like, when is it cool to actually send medicals to another team? Like,
that doesn't bother me, because you want to get far enough down the road where you don't want the medicals to be the reason you're scared off on acquiring a player, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to this move, I understand. You want to do 75-80% of the legwork before you're like, all right, well, this 20% is important, but we needed to get to this point before we do it. Why would the Sabres voluntarily offer up the medicals of Jack Eichel just for the team to say, you know what, fuck it, we don't want it? Like, now that team just has your player's medical information, which doesn't seem and the fair is not exactly the right word, but it would seem misguided to lead the conversation with the medicals. Again, like as Brooks' article has said, the Rangers are doing enough due diligence where they are asking other doctors that aren't necessarily treating Jack Eichel what the hell this injury means, what the options are, what the outcome is for rehab, for surgery. The Rangers are doing everything they possibly could without having the critical information in their hands, because I understand why the Sabres want to just fork it over now. Why would I provide me with a concrete and intriguing reason as to why the Sabres should fork over the medicals right now?
I can't actually give you one, but I'm surprised. I guess I'm not really surprised they haven't done it. It just seems, if you're engaged in trade talks, I guess they're preliminary. It's kind of like before being quoted at a service in that way. But let's talk about going down the road, because that's what you mentioned. Like, how do teams go down the road? You like agree on core pieces or like a core package. And then once we agree on this core package, we'll send you the medicals and we can work around either subtract plus minus this or add this. Is that how we would go down the road, just for people at home?
Well, okay. So maybe it's easier to digest if I put it this way. Instead of talking about medicals, imagine this was a team trying to acquire a player and extend that player, right? You don't allow that team to talk extension until the deal is essentially done, would you?
No.
So why think of it in those terms?
Right.
Why would a team want, if the Rangers were trying to acquire a player on an expiring deal, why would the team allow the Rangers to negotiate the deal first without first figuring out what the hell they're getting from the Rangers themselves?
That's a good point. One takeaway I had from the Brooks article today is that Braden Schneider is not named in the Brooks article. And Brooks likes to drop, the Quick King himself likes to drop secret hints. I'd imagine that maybe, I don't know if Schneider's off the table. I don't believe he would be. But I can imagine that's the package that has been floated to Brooks did not include Schneider in it. So far, I think my takeaway from it has been it's going to be some package of Strome, Niels, Kravtsov, and like maybe a pick or two. Is the original ask, or the thing they're working around now?
I'm gonna disagree with you again. If you're the Buffalo Sabres, and their priority, as we've known for a very long time, is to acquire roughly four pieces equivalent to first round pieces,
which is what they've said for like months now.
Right. It's not just what they've said, it's what we've said.
Yep.
And again, I go back to the point of, well, if you didn't want Jack Eichel and you had to give up four equivalent of four first round pieces, man, it would have been a real fucking shame if you just offer sheeted someone. I don't know.
Mr. Barzal.
By the way, offer sheet numbers came out today and you could offer someone $8.2 million without having them two first round picks. Just gonna put that out there.
Makes you think.
A little bit. Yeah, it makes you think, Ryan. Anywhoosie, back to my point. Everybody and their mother knows that the Rangers are likely going to have to include Nils Lundqvist in this trade. So if you're the Buffalo Sabres, why would you want Nils Lundqvist and Braden Schneider? Wouldn't you want to diversify your assets a little bit?
In the Wu-Tang economy, the diversify your bonds situation?
Yeah. Why? It's not a knock on Schneider being a good prospect. He is. It's not a knock on the Rangers trying to secretly overvalue Schneider over Lundqvist. They don't.
Right.
It's just simply, if you're the Buffalo Sabres and you have the opportunity to
acquire load up?
Four, yeah, why not get a center, Ryan Strome, to replace Jack Eichel? Mm-hmm. Why not get a high upside winger in Vitali Kravtsov? Why not get a potential top pairing defenseman in Nils Lundqvist? And why not get some draft assets that you can then choose what players you want, especially if we're led to believe that the Buffalo Sabres are just over the moon about the players in this year's draft.
Yeah, I have such a hard time believing. I know that's it's one of the worst lies I've ever heard in my life.
Right, but I'm just trying to think of it from the Sabres perspective. Why would you want, say you're getting Strome and Lundqvist for sure.
Yep.
Then why would you want your third asset to be Schneider instead of Kravtsov? Yeah, just even if you think Schneider, I know Adam, our boy, Adam, et cetera, is going to say that Schneider might be a better prospect than Vitali Kravtsov. I'm not here to call him wrong directly to his ears. He could end up eventually being right. But wouldn't you rather just take a shot at a player that is capable of doing something different, like Vitali Kravtsov, at a different position? I'm not saying they can't double up on defensemen. Like, if they wanted Nils and Keandre Miller, well, then you're just talking about acquiring an entire defensive pairing. But if you're... Well, I just don't know why you would want two right-handed defensive prospects in this trade.
That makes sense.
If you're the Sabres.
Now, one other thing that Larry mentioned, which we've never really talked about on the show, is maybe even with that package, the Rangers would want financial flexibility back with Jack Eichel, meaning the Buffalo Sabres would eat some of his contract. Now, if you can get...
That feels like posturing to me. Hmm.
Now we're really talking if they eat 25% to 50% of his contract.
Yeah, but that 100% is just, it just feels like posturing. Because
I'll throw in Matthew Robertson if you're going to, you know, if we're paying instead of 10 million, you know, 7.5 for Jack Eichel. That's a big deal.
No, the eating of salary is what gets you Keandre or Kapo, not Matthew Robertson.
Makes sense.
The Sabres aren't going to eat money for a B-level prospect. I am raining on that parade big time. If the Sabres eat money, that means the Rangers are giving up
serious assets.
Our son or
right,
our child. Yeah.
it's our whole family.
Yeah, it's not to get just another also ran prospect. It's not to get the Robertsons, the Morgan Barrons. Those aren't the players you're giving up in order to get the Sabres to eat money on a star contract with an injury. No way. That step is the Sabres saying, all right, fine, we're going to do this for you, then you are 1,000% sending Kaapo Kakko on over.
Would I trade Kaapo Kakko for $5 million Jack Eichel? Yes. I think I would. I think I would do that.
Yeah, I get it. Wouldn't you rather just keep Kaapo Kakko, and if Eichel doesn't work, trade $5 million Jack Eichel yourself?
Yep. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, the Rangers trying to pinch pennies right now. The one team in the NHL that shouldn't have to worry about the pinching pennies
is the Rangers.
Is the New York Rangers.
Yeah, they have a lot of cap space.
Just if eating this is the shit that always frustrated me so much with the Wilpon era Mets, because the correct answer was just eat the money and get the best prospect available. But instead, the Wilpons, whenever the Mets sucked, would always require the acquiring team to eat all the money and get just nothing in return. So if you're the Rangers and you have the ability to lessen the trade capital you send to an organization simply because you have the ability to eat money, just eat the damn money. We can figure out the math on who gets paid what after that.
Mm-hmm.
Get Jack Eichel and then worry about the next steps in terms of financial flexibility. The Rangers, the players the Rangers are paying aren't bad players. They don't have dead money hanging around on that roster anymore. There isn't a guy the Rangers can't package to get something in return that also saves them a little capital. So I would be annoyed, genuinely annoyed, if the Rangers required the Sabres to eat any money. Because all that means to me, Ryan, is the Rangers could have done a package that cost them less in terms of tradable assets in order to get this player. Just eat the money. Come on.
Yep. I think I agree with you, especially when I've heard, at least in this case, that, and this brings me to my next point, the Rangers could work a situation where it would be tight, but they could work a situation where they would have Mika Zibanejad and Jack Eichel under their cap for the entire length of their salaries and be okay. Now, let's talk about that. Because the other point that Larry made in this article, the Click King himself, said maybe the Rangers go after Jack Eichel as a replacement to know if Mika Zibanejad doesn't want to resign here. Because as of July 28th this year, the Rangers are eligible to extend Mika Zibanejad, but he said pretty much Zibanejad is in control of that entire situation, as he should be, and can hit free agency next year if he really wants, and then go to the open market where likely his price would be higher. So the Rangers will likely try and extend him beforehand for a lower price. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody, but if he does leave, at least if they had Jack Eichel, they'd have a backup center. The plan, and we've said this before, and correct me if I'm wrong, is to have both. You need to have both. And maybe with the season that Mika had, now listen, the first half of his season was lackluster, like every single part of it. Then he came on fiery hot and absolutely torched the Flyers and some other teams, and most of his goals just came in spurts, and he was a tremendous player. That still lowers his value from what it was projected to be. Like, I think you and I would say fairly, maybe he was projected to get 10.5 from the Rangers after this, before the COVID season. Is that kind of in the ballpark?
Yeah.
Now I think it's lower. Now I think it's like 8.5.
Well, I think it's lower not even because of anything Mika Zibanejad did. It's just we're living in a flat cap world.
Yeah.
And this world is going to exist for
four
years, yeah, give or take. I just don't think people who think big money contracts are just going to become a thing again. I'm not sure. We didn't see any really last year. We saw Taylor Hall got $8 million on a one-year deal. And even then, a team had to eat the Buffalo Sabres, idiots, had to eat half that salary to move them for a second round pick. I just don't think you're going to see big money contracts be handed out. I don't know what Mika Zibanejad would have to do necessarily on the ice for him to get to a $10 million range again. It doesn't seem like it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's not his fault. Consider,
yeah, could he get that? I guess he could get that money from a team that's not in cap hell, but the teams that aren't going to be in cap hell.
Like the Devils might pay him that.
Yeah, which brings me to the point of what I was saying. The teams that are going to be able to pay him are teams that are not necessarily super competitive. Like the New York Islanders don't have a lot of money. The Tampa Bay Lightning have negative money.
Well, because they're cheaters. Yeah, they're cheaters, for sure.
When you got to spend $18 million to have an opportunity to – you know, bow to the knees of the greatest goalie ever existed. You got to do it.
Oh, we are in such a bad place with this finals.
Dude, it could have been worse.
Yeah. Islanders, Montreal would have been.
Islanders, Canadians, you and I would have had to take our first hiatus in
podcast. I think we would just have an episode called A Moment of Silence. We would have done the open 2 minutes and like, enjoy the next 58. And it would have just been 58 minutes of static. That's
it. It would have been tough. That would have been literally choosing between, you know, how do you want to die? Like burning to death or drowning?
Yeah,
that is what.
A couple of times. It's like, yeah. What?
The funny thing is, I've long said on this podcast that the Islanders don't bother me. I don't really think about them. For the most part, that is true. And then when I get put into a situation where I have to choose between the Islanders potentially winning a Stanley Cup, or the Montreal Canadiens potentially getting Carey Price's name on said Stanley Cup,
God.
I realize all of a sudden, really quickly, that I just have this desire to not see Islander fans happy.
It's not just that. I the Twitter replies of 2021 that would come in my reply section for the next X
tough.
Amount of years, I just
tough.
Couldn't do it. Because Ranger fans do it, dude. Like, I don't do this, but I really dislike some of you who do this, like where it's like, hey, 94, we won in 94 to Islander fans. Like, dude, that was so long ago at this point. Who cares? Like, and Islander fans who were like, hey, we won four in a row in the 80s. Like, most of you weren't alive They're on
Twitter.
Most
of you. None of you, first of all, were alive. Second of all, the 80s, it's not even hockey. I don't know what the fuck they were playing. It has more in common with, like, lacrosse, I think, than actual hockey.
Yeah, listen.
I don't know. It would have been bad.
Why are we ranking about championships that way? I mean, I'll make fun of the Leafs all day long. That's hilarious. 1967.
Now, hold on. The Mets winning in 1986 is more impressive when you consider the amount of drugs flowing through that locker room.
Like, the drugs was insane.
Yeah,
it was an insane amount. Congratulations.
The Mets won more rings that year than they had arrests, and I think that needs to be properly admired in this day and age.
I appreciate saving the Mets here in the 80s.
Yeah.
Good
Thank
job.
You. I do Protect what I yourself. Can do. Also, I don't remember the New York Yankees winning any titles during that time, so get fucked.
Very strange.
Hey, speaking of cheap people, the NHL, they're cheap.
What are we talking about?
Which is what brings us to Mika Zibanejad not getting paid.
Okay.
Should Mika Zibanejad get paid? Would this year be considered a demerit against Mika Zibanejad?
I think so.
I don't think so. First half of the season, he's recovering from COVID, having a really hard time with it. We know this. We saw this. It was as clear as day to our eyes. Second half of the season, it was kind of just Mika Zibanejad. And the people that are saying, well, he just did it against the Flyers. Yeah, man, that's what? It's 20% of the competition he faced this year. So I can't really knock him for doing it against one team. He only played seven. Like, did you want him to suck equally against everybody? It's not his fault that he had Alain Vigneault's number, because Alain Vigneault 100% offended him in some way, shape, or form when they were in the locker room together. That's the thing. Like, we talked about this with Fitz. I can't give players demerits. I also can't say Connor McDavid's the greatest human being to ever put skates on because he embarrassed a division of not NHLers this year.
Well, hey, listen, the Montreal Canadiens, 18th ranked team, made the playoffs. The Rangers didn't. Stanley Cup Finals, baby. Congratulations.
Yeah, well, oh yeah, all you have to have is a team of 16-game players, right?
I mean, it
can't
worked.
Have the 56-game
players. Hey, listen, the Islanders, 16-game players, they did exactly what the Rangers did in 2015. Didn't score in games 5 and 7 against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Oh, here we go. Hold on. Let's get to our guest real quick. Hey, Jesse, 1 second. And transition.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, we're back with reoccurring guest Jesse Granger of The Athletic. Jesse, you cover the Vegas Golden Knights, and maybe some, you know, I guess I'll just start it off easy, right? What happened? Like, let us know.
What happened with Gerard Gallant in Vegas?
No, what happened with...
I thought you were jumping right into that.
No. We'll get to that. I mean, you know, clearly the topic of the week is, you know, they might not be playing hockey anymore for various reasons. What exactly happened to this Golden Knight team that didn't have any offensive firepower on the offensive side, seemingly all series versus the Canadiens?
Yeah, it's the second year in a row where they've reached this stage, the third round in the playoffs, and they faced a team that last year it was Dallas, this year it was Montreal, and both teams, you kind of, before the series starts, you look at the lineups and it's, you give the edge to Vegas, and as far as just pure talent goes. And it's the second time in a row that a team that employs the same sort of scheme. I think Montreal, the way that they attack the game is very similar to Dallas in that they defend, they defend, they defend. That's the number one priority. They rely on their goaltending. And then once they defend you, they wait for you to make a mistake. And then they try to get you on the counterattack with a fast break the other way. And that's what Montreal was able to do in this series. I think it's an issue the Golden Knights need to try to address this offseason. It's easier said than done. I think you can look at the center position, and Chandler Stephenson played phenomenally this year at number one center for the Golden Knights, but as good of a fit as he is between Max Pacioretty and Mark Stone, you still have to say maybe he's not the elite number one center that most teams need to win a Stanley Cup. So you can look at that, and then you can look at finishing ability. I think this team is built around this front office really, really prioritizes 200-foot forwards. And you look at their forwards and almost none of them are scorers primarily. They're really good defensive players who do everything well. Mark Stone is the best example, but William Karlsson, Riley Smith, Jonathan Marchessault. So it's just the DNA makeup of this team. Even down the lineup, guys like Nick Waugh, and they're just not, they don't have many pure scorers. Like Max Pacioretty is really the only one. And I think that they, because they're so good at everything else, they control possession. And I think during the regular season, that leads to lots of scoring because simply you have the puck the whole time, you're going to score a lot of goals. But then when you get in the playoffs and teams start to really crank up the defense and really start to tighten things up, you need those playmakers to be able to put the puck in the net. And it just seems like the Golden Knights don't have the guy to make the individual play, to make that spectacular play to beat Carey Price or to beat Anton Khudobin the year before. So I think it's a little bit of a quandary for this team, what they're going to do this offseason, considering it's been kind of the same ending to the story the last 2 years.
Jesse, on behalf of all of the fellow Carey Price slanderers that exist in this world, either in podcast form or on Twitter, a collective, what the hell, man? Like that, like what are we? Come on. We can't let Carey Price get away with this. We just can't.
Well, we on this podcast, just to fill Jesse up, or rather catch him up on this situation, we slander Carey Price a lot because we're a Henrik Lundqvist podcast. Maybe you've heard of him. And there's always been this media just blitz of just saying Carey Price is the best goalie alive. He has been forever, even when Henrik was in like his second prime or whatever, third prime you want to call it. So to watch Carey Price, who is Tanner Glass scored on a couple years ago in the playoffs, have this success, it hurts us. It pains us in our chest. It's hard to watch. Is that summarizing what you said, Greg?
Well, not it's because it's important to note, though, it's not just the media. I like the Canadian-based media. Yes, it's a little overboard, but Carey Price has brainwashed the NHL players as well, where every time there's a player survey, it's like, hey, man, who do you want in a game seven? It's just like Henrik Lundqvist has the most career game seven wins of any goalie in the world. And everyone is just like, boy, if we had Carey Price, I'd have my name on
it. He's finally doing it. Here it is.
I know. And to which I say, come on. Why?
I'll have an actual follow-up instead of, because I know the question was just come on. You talked about first line centers, and this podcast can't stop talking about the one hopefully future Ranger, Jack Eichel. There's already been rumors for the Vegas Golden Knights that they would possibly go after Eichel. Why wouldn't they? Is that something you believe will be on the table for them? What even package could they offer? Give us your evaluation of that situation.
Yeah, I think it's definitely on the table for the simple fact that the Golden Knights are in on pretty much every one of these situations. I mean, since they've come into the league, George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon have been so incredibly aggressive in terms of chasing these prized free agents or trade targets. Just off the top of my head, I mean, they were in on Erik Karlsson in year one at the trade deadline, ended up not getting him and opted to go for Tomas Tatar, which was a disaster. But that very next offseason, they signed Paul Stastny, who was one of the main free agent centers out there. They trade for Max Pacioretty, which was obviously a huge blockbuster trade. They trade for Mark Stone, which was the biggest trade of that deadline. The next deadline, they trade for Robin Lehner, who was one of the biggest trades. They sign Alex Pietrangelo. I mean, they were in on the John Tavares sweepstakes. He obviously didn't have much interest, and he kind of had his eyes set on Toronto, so they didn't really get far in that. But they were interested in John Tavares. Like, there has not been a superstar player that has been on the market that the Golden Knights haven't pursued to this point. So I do think that they will kick the tires on it. I don't know how realistic it is to get done, just because of there are so many factors. One, the Golden Knights don't have the draft capital that some other teams have that are trying to get Jack Eichel, right? Like the Golden Knights, their first round picks are useless. I mean, not entirely useless, but right, in comparison to teams with top 10 picks, top 5 picks, it's pretty useless. And you can't just give them like 2 years down the road, because the way the Golden Knights have played, you just assume their draft picks are going to be useless for a while. There's that. And then there's the fact that they don't really have a ton of top prospects to trade away either. They do have Peyton Krebs, but I don't think they want to get rid of him. And they have traded Nick Suzuki, Eric Brandstrom. They've traded a lot of young, high draft picks. So they're kind of running out of ammunition there. I do think they're going to try. I do think, well, I don't think they're going to try. I think they're going to call and see what the offer is. If you, I wrote a story yesterday and I tried to put together an offer, and I'm talking to people in Buffalo, kind of asking what they're looking for. And the offer I came up with was Shea Theodore, Cody Glass, and a first round pick. And it might have to be a little more than that. It might have to be another first round pick in there. Just because, like I said, their first round picks aren't as valuable as most. But they, I mean, going after Jack Eichel, it's going to be a fundamental reworking of the roster. And I just don't know if the Golden Knights want to do that after how good they were this year. So I don't think the Golden Knights end up with Jack Eichel, but I do think their name is probably going to be in that conversation until it's settled.
Well, Jesse, you brought up two key names, which will translate perfectly, or I would say transition perfectly, to the Gerard Gallant elephant in the room that we need to talk about. George McPhee, first general manager in Vegas Golden Knights history, hires Gerard Gallant to be the first coach in team history. 2 years go by. Kelly McCrimmon, who was an assistant general manager for McPhee, gets promoted alongside with McPhee and becomes the guy. The Knights get off to a little bit of a slower start than I think people were waiting for. Pete DeBoer becomes available, and the Knights immediately make the switch. In your mind, were there any significant red flags with Gerard Gallant's performance in year three with the Vegas Golden Knights that made his firing warranted? And do those red flags carry over to anything a Ranger fan would have to worry about?
Yeah, I think, and like, I remember writing this when they made the switch. I think it had a lot more to do with philosophical differences between the front office and Gallant than it did his performance, right? So the Golden Knights, they had lost like four in a row or whatever. They were on a little bit of a losing skid there, and they had like fallen into like danger of being in playoff position, but it was the middle of the season. And by the way, he was like a week away from coaching the All-Star game. So the coach who has the best record in each division gets to coach that team in the All-Star game. And he was set to coach it because he had the best record in the division like 2 weeks before that. So it's not like his performance was all that bad. The team did have some issues. I mean, the team was not performing as well as they should have. They were coming out really slow, which is funny because in these playoffs, they actually had that issue where they would start slow. They would not show up for the first period, and then they'd turn it on in the second and third and just completely dominate teams. But in hockey, you're down a couple goals. The team can kind of sit back and play defense. You're going to be in trouble no matter how much you dominate the rest of the game. And that's what they were doing back then. I can remember a moment where we kept asking Gallant, Turk, as everyone refers to him, as you guys will quickly learn, all the players will only refer to him as Turk. We asked Turk a couple times, what do you have to do to get these players playing at the beginning of games? And he was like, I don't know what you want me to do. Do you want me to go in there and with like pom-poms and cheerlead them? And like, it was clearly frustrating. Like, there was a point of frustration with the slow starts with this team. I don't think that's necessarily fair to put on Gerard Gallant. I think the reason he ultimately is not the coach of the Golden Knights is more so, I think a lot of players that George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon were acquiring, he didn't want to play. I think you look at Tomas Tatar, they made that trade. They traded a first, a second, and a third round pick for him, and then nice. Gallant essentially benched him for the entire playoffs and wouldn't put him on the ice. Healthy scratch. And it's because he just didn't, he wasn't the back-checking, hard-nosed guy in the corners that Gallant likes. Like, Gallant puts so much. I talked earlier about how this organization emphasizes 200-foot players. For Gallant, it's defense. And if you don't have the defense, he doesn't care about any other aspect of your game. He puts so much emphasis on that side of the puck. And I think there were players that, not just Tomas Tatar, Nikita Gusev is another one. Vadim Shipachev is another one. Two Russian guys who came over to play for the Golden Knights and ultimately never played for them. Because they didn't really fit into Gerard Gallant's system, and he just preferred to play guys like a Cody Eakin, for example, who is more responsible defensively but not quite the playmaker offensively. So I think a combination of they were looking for a reason to go to Pete DeBoer, I think. So they needed him to struggle a little bit, and he did, and the team did have a lull there. But I think it was more just philosophical differences between the way they viewed things and the way he viewed things.
We spoke to a beat writer for the Florida Panthers named George Richards, and he kept bringing up over and over and over again that all of the players loved Gallant to death. Like, they just couldn't stop singing his praises. Is that the case with the Golden Knights also?
100%. He is the most player-friendly coach, not just in hockey. I'd say he's the most player-friendly coach in any of the four major sports. Oh, like the players love the guy. They absolutely love him. He's one of the guys. Like, it's to the point where he almost acts like he's just one of the players in the locker room. He's great in that aspect. The players love him. He has their back. He will refuse to criticize a player no matter how bad they're playing, no matter how like many questions he gets. He will find positives in their game. He will stick with them. He's also, I think, one of the biggest reasons he did so well with this team is he gives his players confidence by not limiting their ice time or benching them when they play bad. A player that he believes in, Cody Eakin's a perfect example, and Cody Eakin's career has gone downhill, and he was really bad in Buffalo this year, but he was pretty good for his first year in Vegas, and then it kind of got worse. And as it got worse, and as his analytics were poor, me and other writers covering the team would constantly ask Gallant about him. When are you going to take him out of the lineup? Have you thought about making switches? And he sticks with his guys. Derek England's another one. He will stick with his guys. And I think when a coach does that, and when players know, if I have a bad couple games, if I make some mistakes, my coach isn't going to bench me. He's not going to take my ice time away. He has confidence in me. I think that allows those players to play with a little more freedom and a little less pressure. So I think that's part of the reason he's such a player's coach. It's a part of the reason he's such a player-friendly guy. A story I like to tell to kind of let people know like how Gerard Gallant is and like the guy he is in the room. The first season in Vegas, the players molded a phallic shape out of wax and they put it on top of Nate Schmidt's helmet in the locker room. And the way their helmets sit in the locker room, it's above you. So you kind of just put your helmet on without really looking at the helmet. And that's what he did. So he puts it on, and he has no idea it's on there. And he's walking out of the locker room to go to practice. And remember, practices in Vegas are open to the public, and they are packed. Like, there's 1,000 people in there watching practice every day. Maybe not 600 people every day watching practice. And Schmidt's walking out, and the players are, like, obviously trying to not laugh so that he'll get out there. And then they look at the front door, and it's Gallant standing at the door, and they think, well, crap, this isn't going to work. The coach is going to tell him, like, what are you doing? Get back in there. And Schmidt gets to Gallant, and Gallant just goes, get out there, Schmitty. And him on the ice. Because he's, like, one of the players. Like,
right.
He saw what they were doing, and he's like, I'm not going to mess this up for you guys. So then Schmidt went out there, got embarrassed, had to go back in the room and change his helmet. But, yeah, I think that's a small example of – just the way he kind of interacts with the players and the way he's kind of one of the guys in there.
Jesse, one thing we've been trying to, we're going to harp on it with you. We harped on it with George Richards as well, is we're trying to figure out the relationship Gallant has typically with younger players. Now we knew with Florida, we're talking about Baby Ekblad, Baby Barkov, Riley Smith at his younger points. Vegas, It was more a collection of unknowns than it was a collection of youth. But do you think Gallant is the proper guy for a roster as young as the Rangers? I mean, youngest team in baseball. Whoa, youngest team in hockey. Sorry. Been a very long week for Greg.
There's a Rangers that play baseball too, right?
they're pretty bad as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he can be. I will say that there are times, and like Vegas, it's kind of hard. I feel like I'm not in the great position to answer this because the way things happened in Vegas, being an expansion team, their draft picks simply weren't ready. Like this was the first year, really, year four, where their draft picks actually were ready to play. And like even Cody Glass wasn't ready this year, but like Nick Hague played a lot. So I think There was a hesitancy in Vegas for him to play young players, but at the same time, they weren't ready. And it was an expansion team that was one of the oldest teams in the league because you don't have that. The way the rules are set up in expansion, they're obviously set up for you to get good players. Clearly, Vegas was stacked. But you can't get players under, like, 25, right? Like, they only had a couple players under that age, and that was because of trades they worked out, Alex Tuck and Shea Theodore. Aside from those guys, it's just a bunch of veterans, and then you've got 17-year-olds who you just drafted, and by the time he was out of here, those players simply weren't ready yet. So I think it's hard to place blame on Gallant for not playing young players. I will say, he didn't play the young players. He prefers the veteran guys. Like, he prefers Cody Eakin and Derek England, like the old, wily vet that I can trust. I know what he's going to give me out there, rather than trying to develop someone. Mm-hmm. But he didn't have the young players that the Rangers have. He didn't have Lafreniere. And, like, it's not the same type of youth. So I do think that there's a chance he could be really good because he's a player-friendly coach. He gives guys confidence, and he builds a lot of team chemistry really well. Like, I think those are all his strengths, and I think that can be good for young kids coming into the NHL.
Yeah, he talked a lot in his press conference, similar to what you said with the 200-foot game. His system is really, like, I guess you're trying to say, like, forecheck heavy. Like, yes. That was Kapokako's specialty when he was a draft prospect, and then since then he's had, I would say, disastrous year one and a rebound in year two. So I think it's what Greg is kind of getting towards is, like, these players, these young kids are going to have to play this forechecking style or they won't see the time. But you said, like, he won't give up on them. And he mentioned that too. Like, if someone makes a mistake, that won't be the case. And you didn't watch any Ranger games this year, I'm sure, because you were covering the East at all. But David Quinn would just bench some guy. Like, right away, if you made a mistake, that just happens.
Right, that won't be happening with Gallant. And you mentioned the forecheck. That's his thing, right? Like, after every game, if they lost, it's because the forecheck wasn't good enough. If they won, it's because the forecheck was so good. Like, for Gerard Gallant, his system, that is where everything starts and ends, is the forecheck. And when the forecheck's going, his system is suffocating, and we saw it in Vegas. And when the forecheck's not working, there can be issues, especially exiting the zone.
Got it. So I guess that brings us to the question with Gallant is, can we expect him to go the whole term? Because he's had, I don't know what was the real reasoning behind him leaving Vegas. It seems like it wasn't even his fault when he got put in a taxi cab in Florida. Like, was it just, hey, we have a disagreement, we don't want to change the scenery. It doesn't seem like the rub on him was, hey, he's a guy who might not make it the 3 years you have him there, but all the players love it. Everything I've heard has been extremely positive. So is it just like there was two coincidences in his life where it was like unfortunate he was about to coach the All-Star game and the other one was Thanksgiving and this guy just gets bad beats? Or, like, is there something secret we don't know? Like, I can't find a bad thing. Is that weird?
I think you're kind of on the right track. I think it's two bad circumstances. Well, for one, I think Florida, and I think they've changed a lot of things and they're running things a lot better now. But I think back then, Florida was a train wreck and they didn't know what they were doing. And I think that was a mistake to fire Gerard Gallant. So I'll chalk the first one up to Florida are idiots.
Us
the
too.
Second one, I think, is a bit of it's a bad circumstance. And I think it's partially, to be honest, and this is just pure conjecture. This is not something I've been told. This is just my opinion after 2 years of seeing how things have gone since Gerard Gallant left. I think part of it is, I think when George McPhee hired Gerard Gallant, he expected the expansion team to suck, like everyone did. Everyone in the world thought they were going to suck, right?
I think in his mind
it was, let's get a coach who can keep this locker room harmonious, even if we're losing every night, and keep the vibes good and keep developing players and have players be happy and come to the rink and wanting to work and improve on things, even if they're getting their butts kicked every night. And I think if you told me I need a coach to keep my locker room morale up, Gerard Gallant is the guy. So I think, and then suddenly they're this cup contender, and partially because of Gallant, which is the craziest part, is I feel like I don't think he and McCrimmon gave Gallant enough of the credit for turning that team that was supposed to suck into a cup contender. I think they thought, well, suddenly we have a team that wants to win the Stanley Cup. And I don't think they necessarily thought Gallant was their type of coach to win the Stanley Cup with, if that makes sense. I think they thought 6 years from now, when we're about to actually compete for playoffs and a cup, we'll have a different coach by then. And then suddenly it was Gallant. So if Pete DeBoer doesn't get fired from San Jose, Gerard Gallant's probably still the coach in Vegas. I think they really, really like Pete DeBoer. And I remember when that all went down, I talked to a lot of people around the league just trying to get their opinion on this, on the whole thing. And the opinion of Pete DeBoer amongst hockey people around the league is so high. Like, his people think so highly of his hockey intellect and his X's and O's and just the way he thinks the game. So I think in their minds, it was like, we like Gerard Gallant, but we don't like him as much as Pete DeBoer, and he's not going to be on the market for very long. And how long is it going to be until there's a coach like this on the market again? Let's just pull the trigger. And it was a super ballsy move, obviously,
yep,
to fire a coach who had just won the Jack Adams and led a expansion team to a Stanley Cup. And to be honest, it hasn't really been the wrong decision. DeBoer has – the Golden Knights have gotten better since DeBoer got here, and he's been excellent. I think they can both be really good coaches, Gallant and DeBoer. I just think – one, I think DeBoer's thoughts on hockey in general kind of match McCrimmon and McPhee a little more than Gallant did. And two, I think that – like I said, I think they – when they – hired Gallant, I think it was to do something different than what actually ended up happening.
It's funny because the Rangers actually hired him to do what the Vegas Knights didn't think he could do.
Right. But he took the team to the Stanley Cup, right? I feel like he doesn't get enough credit for that, at least from the front office here. But I mean, I disagree with a lot of the things the front office here does. It's amazing for a team that's had as much success as they have.
Right. Isn't that always the fun part?
Jesse, right. I guess my next question for you would be, you're a guy very connected to the NHL. You're obviously a student of the game, I think it's fair to say. In your humble opinion, would you have hired somebody else than Gerard Gallant? All you know about Gallant and all you know about the league.
No, I would have hired Gerard Gallant. To be honest, I am shocked Seattle didn't hire him. If I was Seattle, I think I would have hired him the day the Golden Knights fired. Like, did they even have a GM at that point? If I'm the owner of Seattle, I'm literally hiring him the second I had the opportunity to hire him. They didn't, and I think the Rangers will benefit from it. I think Gerard Gallant is a very, very good hockey coach. And I don't know exact if you guys are in the room every day with talking to the coaches, but if you are, you're going to love it.
Yeah, we wish.
He is a kick to deal with. He's hilarious. He is really fun to talk to, just like to like shoot the breeze with. He's hilarious. He's a good guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems like I can't find a bad – I'm trying to find people to say bad things. I'm legitimately out here searching. It seems
I do
very
agree.
Hard.
Right. I agree with your point that you said earlier about, like, is there something going on that this guy who we can't find a bad thing about keeps getting fired? And I do think there is something to that. Like, I do think that maybe he is a stubborn guy, right? And when you have stubborn people in those positions, there can be fights with the front office and there can be disagreements that get pretty heated. And I don't know if that's what happened in Vegas. I'm not here reporting that there were huge arguments, but knowing Gallant and talking to him and getting in arguments, I've been in plenty of arguments with him on TV, on live TV, plenty of them. I know that he can be stubborn. He can get fired up and he can like bite back. Right. And I think that could have something to do with why he has not lasted in places. He does not give in when he thinks strongly about a player or about an idea in the game. So I think that could play a factor. And if you're sitting here thinking, like you said, we can't find anything negative, why does this guy not have a job? Why is he bounced from team to team? Maybe that has something to do with it.
Yeah. To the stubborn point, from what we've been able to dig up, it's that he's almost been a cause of two different front office changes. In Florida, it's a completely different front office. For whatever reason, they didn't fire him during the off season. They waited until the regular season and waited until they had a quote unquote reason. And part of it was Gallant was just unwilling to work with them, to the stubbornness you said. And then in Vegas, it did feel like he was hired by George McPhee, but then Kelly McCrimmon became the decision maker. And it seemed like Gallant didn't necessarily care who the decision maker was because he wanted to be the on ice decision maker. Am I off with that description?
Okay. I wouldn't say, so the McPhee-McCrimmon situation is very unique. They've basically been co-managing this team from day one. And when their position titles changed, nothing actually changed. So since the team basically came to existence, George McPhee has been the top guy. And Kelly McCrimmon is, because of his junior background, he owned, coached, and managed the Wheat Kings for like a long time. He has a lot of background in junior hockey. He's kind of been the amateur GM, like he's kind of on the draft side of things. And they were afraid they were going to lose Kelly to Edmonton or whoever, maybe Seattle, whoever. They were afraid someone was going to give him a GM job and they didn't want to lose him. So they promoted George to president of hockey ops, promoted Kelly to GM. But I'll be completely honest, literally nothing changed in terms of how they're dealing with things. The only thing that changed is when GMs call to make a trade, it's Kelly on the phone instead of George. And when they have GM meetings, Kelly shows up instead of George. But they're still talking everything through. George still has final say on things. Like, it's very much George McPhee's team still. Not to say Kelly McCrimmon isn't making decisions, but he's been making decisions even when he was the assistant GM. They've basically been co-managers, and really nothing has changed. So I wouldn't look at that. I wouldn't look at that change in management in the same way that you do a lot of other ones. Really, not a lot changed there.
But so then to double down, not to double down on it, but necessarily, you think this is more to do with DeBoer becoming available than Gallant, anything he did?
Yes, I do.
I rest my case, Your Honor. I have no more Gallant questions. What about you, Greg?
I think you've done a good job. Ryan isn't kidding when we've been trying to say we're trying to leave no stone unturned, because Ryan and I, and you can put us on the spot too with this one, neither of us were over the moon about Gallant, and we've almost been trying to find reasons to justify how not excited we were about the prospect of Gallant becoming the Rangers manager or coach. But between you and George Richards, it seems like not only are Ryan and I in the minority, we're just flat out wrong.
I really like him. I like him as a coach. I think he's good for the, like I said, especially he gets the most out of his players. I think that's the number one thing with Gerard Gallant is, and you saw it in the expansion year, like every player on that team had their best season they've ever had. He gets the most out of his players, and it's not really with X's and O's. Like, I think a lot of times you think of like, okay, can a coach's system get the most? Can a coach's system put this guy in the right spots on the ice to do well? That's not why Gallant gets the most out of his players. I think it's more they are confident. They play confidently. His system is very simplistic. It takes a lot of the thinking out. It's not very structured. He lets guys be creative. And you give hockey players confidence and let them be creative, good things happen.
This is my final. Go on, Greg.
Well, not to cut you off, no, Ryan, but just to completely piggyback off that point, how important are the assistants with Gerard Gallant? Do the Rangers need to go out and find game tacticians? Guys who really understand certain aspects of the games? Is there a shortcoming the Rangers or Gallant understands about his coaching method that needs to be addressed with an assistant coach?
Perhaps. I honestly don't know. Like, I can't give a super solid answer on that. I expect Mike Kelly to be on the staff. I don't know if there have been any rumblings there. I honestly haven't been following it that closely. No, but rumblings. Mike Kelly, that is his guy. Like, he is his right-hand man. When they in Vegas, when they fired Gallant, they fired Mike Kelly along with him. They didn't fire any of the other assistants. All the other assistants are still Ryan McGill, Ryan Craig. They're all still in Vegas working with Pete DeBoer. The only one that they let go was Mike Kelly. And he also was with Gallant in Florida, and he was with him in Columbus. So I definitely expect Mike Kelly to be hired by New York.
I'm sure that'll happen. This is my final actual question. The NHL announced today that the 2022 NHL All-Star Game will be in Las Vegas. Congratulations for you. I'm sure that'll be very fun. Is there a legitimate Vegas home field advantage when players go out the night before and then they play the Golden Knights?
The Vegas flu, huh? I think it can be real, for real. Recently, it hasn't. Obviously, COVID restrictions keeping the players in their hotel rooms has completely eliminated that. So recently, you can't really say that. And to be honest, this year, Vegas had its best record at home of any season. So maybe the Vegas flu isn't real. But I do know that, like, while there isn't scientific proof of on-the-ice results, as good as Vegas' home record has been, they've been just as good on the road. I know, just knowing people in Vegas having those conversations with people that work in the industry at casinos and nightclubs, the players do enjoy Vegas when they're
in
Vegas.
No duh.
I don't see a reason, and I don't see a reason why they shouldn't.
Right, no duh. Vegas has always been incredible at home, and you make some good stats of, like, on the road at exactly they're better, whatever you want to say. But I just can't imagine, like, you're playing, like, you live there, so you're not going out every single night if you're a Vegas Golden Knight. But if you're on the Rangers, I mean, you're going out that night.
And I think that in year one, maybe the Vegas flu was a little worse like was a little more pronounced mm-hmm. than it would be, because these guys, like if you're the Rangers, when you come to Vegas, it's like, okay, this is the 10th time we've come here now over the last few years. Like it's not, it doesn't lose its luster, but it's not, I think that first year, these yeah. guys had, a lot of them had never been in Vegas, especially during the season. So it was like, we're going out. Like, of course that's we it. Are. That's our one trip to Vegas. I think it kind of, as the seasons go on, it may wear off, but yeah, no, it's, and for the All-Star game, I cannot wait to see the quality.
Throw it up on the ice.
because these guys, when they're there for a real game, you have to show up. Like this is, you're being paid to show up and you need to win. And like, you have to be able to play at a high level. For the All-Star game, nobody takes this serious already. Right. So these guys, that extra drink you're not having because you don't want to be hungover the next day for the game. If you're here for the All-Star game, you're definitely having that drink, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Do we think the game actually gets played? Like, I think they're going to do the skills competition, and then that night everyone's going to get bombed and show up the next day and be like, eh, fuck it. No, we're not doing this. This is dumb.
I remember when the Golden Knights had the jersey unveiling, and it was the year – so the year the Golden Knights – came into the league was the year that they switched over from to Adidas making the jerseys, right? And they had, it was at the Wynn, I forgot what the nightclub is called, but it was at the nightclub inside the Wynn casino here, which is one of the nicest casinos in Vegas. And they had all the jerseys on mannequins because they're unveiling all of the Adidas jerseys. And then obviously the Golden Knights one was like the main, they had a cloak over it that they like unveiled at the end. But I can remember there were so many, it was the same as the All-Star, or sorry, the trophy, the award ceremony. So there were a lot of players in town and we're just kind of walking around this nightclub, checking out all the jerseys. And there are just drunk hockey players everywhere. It was fantastic.
Why don't we do this? There's a lot of sponsors for the NHL that are alcohol providers. Let's just make it happen. It's not that hard. Get them on the
ice.
It's going
to be fun, man.
Crack them open.
That All-Star game, it's only been announced for a couple hours, and I already have so many ideas swimming in my head, and I'm already talking to the like game ops people. Obviously, everyone knows that Golden Knights game ops, they go all out. They yeah. are over the top. They are as flamboyant and exaggerated as they can possibly get. I can only imagine them knowing that the whole hockey world is going to be expecting something in the All-Star game. I can't wait to see what they do. The All-Star game is going to be as fun as it's ever been.
Incredible. Jesse, can't thank you enough for coming on and defending Gerard Gallant to us and everything else you've talked about. I'm sorry about your Golden Knights. I mean, I know that you just cover them, but it would have been fun to cover another Stanley Cup final, I'm sure.
Yeah, it would have. Thanks for having me, guys. I can't wait for my first trip to New York to see Turk again.
Yeah. You'll let us know when you come out here. We'll try and meet up with you. Very, 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 definitely. Very fun time. Jesse, you're the best. You can follow Jesse at theathletic.com where you can read all of his stories on the Golden Knights. Thanks, Jesse.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, we're back. We had to cut off the first part of the show a little early. Jesse showed up a little early, but we had a great interview. So thought that was good. Learned a lot about Gerard Gallant, Turk, as they call him. Can't find mm-hmm. a way to hate the guy. And you were yep. talking about baseball, I think.
I got distracted. I just want to – just going to review the first four pitches of this Met game.
Yes, as is tradition.
Pitch one was Jared Eichhoff pitching for the Mets tonight. Fucking legend, apparently.
Philly's legend.
Pitch one was a ball.
Yep.
Pitch two, Kyle Schwarber hit a home run.
Yes.
Pitch three, Trey Turner hit a home run. Mm-hmm. Pitch four, Juan Soto hit a bullet of a double.
Cool.
And now we're in the fucking second inning, and the skeleton of Gerardo Parra has also taken Jared Eichhoff deep. So I don't think the Mets are going to win this game. Just going to go out there on a fucking limb.
I hope they
and
win.
Say the
no,
Mets
I
aren't
really
winning
hope
game.
They win. For a lot of reasons. So let's get to our five-star questions slash our five-star listener Patreon questions. So we have a couple of fun ones today, and I think some of them are pretty easy. This is from TSE1231 on our Patreon Discord. If you could bring back one former Ranger since 2000 back in their prime to the current squad, who would you pick and why, assuming no trades are made and no cap considerations? This is Yager, and it's not even close.
Yeah, so I think the important thing here to remember is it has to be – I'm getting the player at their current level – from the year 2000 onward, right? So, like, I'm not getting 1994 version of Brian Leetch just because he was a Ranger.
Well, I mean, if we're getting 94 Leetch, and that's
no, but we're not. I think the key here is to you're getting the player at his level of performance in the year that we're talking about, right?
It does say back in their prime.
No, I think the best way to do this is you're getting the player from that year that we're talking about. I really do think there are only two answers. One is Jágr during his mythical 120-point season. I honestly think the only other one is Marian Gaborik.
you ready for this one? Curveball. Henrik Lundqvist.
Well, that's a little unfair now, isn't it?
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yes, Henrik is at all times always the correct answer. But I think if you wanted to go playmaker, it's Jágr or Gaborik.
Excuse me typing for a second. I'm just going.
And I guess maybe McDonough as a third option.
Man, McDonough played incredible in that last game for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Good for him, man. Happy for him. Hope he gets another one. Probably will.
What do you mean gets another one? You hope he gets one?
Yep.
Oh, shit. He was on the team last year.
Yeah, bro. He had one.
Whatever, dude. Shit didn't happen in 2020. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know why they're not doing this. Anyway, this is from Zabinabrad. Zabinabrad? Nice. This is from an iTunes review, five-star question. Seems like the Caps may be looking to offload Kuznetsov. Is he an elite talent to be had for cheap as a reclamation project and a legit 2C? Or is he just Tony D 2.0, just another head case destined to be a locker room toxicity? I think the contract is a little rough.
The contract's a little rough considering we don't really know what you're getting with the player. He's a guy where the Capitals have to eat some money in order for me to be truly interested. Is he a problem in the locker room, or is he just doesn't know where to draw the line on the partying, right? I think there's a difference. I think with Kuznetsov, if there is problems in the locker room, it's that the team doesn't fully believe that he's invested. But is that the coaching staff and management believing he's not fully invested, or is that the players thinking he's not fully invested just because he likes to have a good time? Like, there have been plenty. Again, I've talked about the 1986 Mets already once on this podcast.
Why not?
There are plenty of players on that team who'd like to have a really good time, but those same players also performed when it was their day. So the clubhouse was accepting of their off-field habits because they knew when money was on the line, when push came to shove, these guys were going to perform. I don't have the vibe from Capitals players that they have a problem with what Kuznetsov does in his extracurricular time. It also helps that Kuznetsov for a very long time has been an all-star level player.
They also fired Trotz when they probably shouldn't have done that.
Right. And maybe Trotz had a better feel on what Kuznetsov was and wasn't doing and could reel him in better than other guys. Would that translate if Kuznetsov was a partier that went to a different locker room where these guys only know Kuznetsov by reputation and they're not getting that level of performance? Would it fly over as well? Maybe not. But I always hesitate to call a player a head case because management might not like them. I just think that means management doesn't like them. In terms of do I want the Rangers to go after Kuznetsov, boy, he's like option D.
I don't even think he's like D, to be honest. I think that's one of the ones that ends up as a mistake.
If the price is so low that you're essentially getting him for just the price of like
acquiring him,
administration,
paying him.
Yeah. Like if the Rangers trade a third round pick and a C-level prospect for Evgeny Kuznetsov, yeah, man, I'll take that. I'll take that risk. Whatever. What am I losing? Would I trade a top five Ranger prospect, a first round pick, a second round pick for Evgeny Kuznetsov? No, I don't think I would. I'd rather go shopping somewhere else.
This is from Chris in Florida. Rick Carpinello, dear friend of the show, stated in his five predictions of the offseason article, by the way, this is a quote. How do I read this like Carp? I don't know. This is bad. By the way, it was Panarin who frequently asked David Quinn, if not begged or demanded, that Blackwell be on his right rather than Kako, among others. Usually Quinn deferred and said, Do you know anything, any additional information or feedback on this quote? How do you think Gallant handles this?
I think it's about where that information is coming from, right? I don't know for sure how the conversation went. Rick would have a better idea as to that. I have a very hard time believing Artemi Panarin walked up to David Quinn and said, play Colin Blackwell on my wing or else. Like, I don't think it was that, especially since we saw Kako play plenty on that wing throughout the season anyway. I think it was more of David Quinn might have gone up to Artemi Panarin one day and said, hey, how do you feel about Colin Blackwell playing on your wing? And Panarin probably had nice things to say. And it probably went as further as, do you feel more comfortable playing with Blackwell or trying to play with Kaká right now? And maybe Panarin just said, I feel a little bit more comfortable with Blackwell. He's just got a little bit more confidence in his game right now. I can believe that conversation happening 100% of the way. I don't know. Begging? Does Artemi Panarin look like a dude that begs?
No.
Like everything
doesn't
we've heard
really
about
seem
him,
that way.
Yeah. The way the quote's being painted sure makes it sound like David Quinn was saying a couple things on his way out the door, because David Quinn also knows that that's not going to get refuted by anyone in the locker room. So, to me, the source of that quote,
the source of that quote is
a lot
David
more
Quinn.
Than what. Yeah, the source of that quote matters a lot more to me than what is being said in the actual quote. I don't call it bullshit, because I don't think Rick would. We know Rick well enough to know that he's not going to print bullshit. But I think that's a very convenient quote. And I think that's the easiest way to put it.
To me, that's exactly it. It might have been like, hey, Kako's still learning the ropes here, and he's not doing the X, Y, and Z. And I prefer to play with Blackwell tonight. He's playing with his head on fire. He scored 10 goals. He's doing the dirty work that Kako's not. He doesn't know where to be. He's still a young kid, et cetera, et cetera. But begging is not what I believe Artemi Panarin did in any circumstance. And I don't think Gallant has to deal with it, because I don't think it's real.
Yeah, that to me sounds like the pitching coach getting fired and then saying afterwards, you know, I would have left so-and-so in, but he said he was tired.
Oh, God. Stupid.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's it for the show. Appreciate everybody listening. Yeah, I know.
Wow.
I know.
All right. So good. I'm so happy you're leaving me to watch this fucking piece of shit Met game for a little bit more.
That's yours. That's your problem, not mine.
Yeah. Whatever. I got Chinese food on my way home. I'm excited about that.
The Rangers are in, or they're out, or they're still in on Jack Eichel. You can follow us on...
No, but that's the thing. Not to interrupt you, keep... The Rangers are in. There is no other scenario.
I'm doing a bit, Greg. It's called a bit.
Your bit sucks, Ryan. your bit is ass, all right? Okay. It's a big, wet, smelly fart.
Thank
you. And it plugged the toilet. That's what your bit is.
Welcome to summer content, everybody. You can follow me on Twitter at OverIME. You can follow Greg at Bushers Break. We'll be back next week. Actually, we'll be back at OT. Subscribe, patreon.com/BlueShirtsBreakaway. Listen to OT this week. Love you guys. Bye. And of course, this episode was brought to you by our general managers, our offer sheet club. Thank you so much to the Patreon subscribers who make this work. Alex Gartner, Amber Coesberger, Ben Waters, Ben Doyle, Broadway Blue Shirt Bleeder, CJ Selwagon, David Aaron, and David Siegel, Dennis Deitz, Eric Stagg, George Obrinski, JD, Jimmy Mack, Chris from Florida, Lazik, Ronkowski, Matthew Kind, Pavel Kodarev. Damn it. God damn it. God damn it, Ryan. And Ryan's actually the next person. Steven Lomayer. I think I did that right one. Stig Bull from all the way from Oslo. Swinegard, Tommy O'Neill, Tori from Manhattan, Vinny Hay, and Will Spector. We cannot appreciate you all enough. I want to do some fun songs with this segment. I want to do like maybe write a story. Something weird. Give me some ideas. And we'll do a nice ending segment with the Banner Club, the offer sheet club that support this show. We'll be back next week. We love you guys, as I already said that, so you get two of those. All right, bye.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.